Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in, everybody. What's going on? This is Fantasy Football Today. Just got finished recording a about 40-minute podcast with Chris Towers and Ben Schrager. We talked about the Dallas game. We talked about our five big topics for the week. And then when we finished recording, and I had already finished editing and was ready to publish, well, the George Kittle news broke and his foot broke, and he is out for 8 weeks. So you are dropping George Kittle in your leagues, most likely. And we're going to talk about that right now. And then you will hear the podcast that was just recorded. But we got Jamie joining us right now. It's me, Jamie, and Chris. Here we go. Jamie, what's your immediate reaction, fantasy-wise, to this very unfortunate injury for George Kittle?
It bleeping sucks. It does. Look, anytime you lose a player of his caliber for the basically the fantasy season, it doesn't sound like he's going to play again anytime soon to help your fantasy rosters. It's awful. I mean, you know, we've had a lot of big injuries this year. It's been a very frustrating season, and he's, you know, among the biggest. So it stinks.
And last year he missed two games. Deebo Samuel had two huge games. It's worth noting Garoppolo threw a bunch, 46 passes in one of those games, 45 passes in the other. But Deebo Samuel, 112 yards against Seattle without George Kittle. Deebo Samuel, 134 yards against Arizona without George Kittle. We're going to get into that. Let's start, though, with a tight end replacement, Chris. If I have George Kittle and I need tight ends, looking at maybe Jordan Reed, but who else or should I be looking at on the waiver wire?
Yeah, Jordan Reed could come off IR. He started practicing last week, but it's not clear if he'll be able to play in week 9. For the rest of the season, the best option, if he's available, is clearly Dallas Goedert, who played pretty much a full snap share, full route share yesterday. Only got one target, but he's 68% rostered. If he's out there in your league, if he gets dropped on Wednesday morning, make sure you check out and see if Goddard's there, because he's the closest you'll be able to come to replacing Kittle for the rest of the season. If not, you should probably make Eric Ebron your priority. He gets the Dallas Cowboys in week 9, and he'll be the top waiver wire option at tight end for week 9. Long term, you know, I like Logan Thomas as a potential second half breakout, scored 2 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks before his bye, or Austin Hooper when he comes back in week 10 from his appendix removal surgery. Yeah, because they don't have Odell Beckham. I think it's going to be highly concentrated offense between Hooper and Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, Hooper's a great option. And Jordan Reed, let's give him a little credit. Weeks 2 and 3, he had 8 targets in week 2 without Kittle. Caught 7 of them for 50 yards and 2 touchdowns at the Jets. Then against the Giants in week 3, he had 6 targets. He had only 2 catches for 23 yards, but his foot landed out of bounds and early in the game. He was in the end zone. He was wide open. He almost had a touchdown in that game, and he hurt himself on that play too. So he was hobbled in that game. So I think there should be some interest in Jordan Reed, who's 4% rostered. Jamie, anything to add there? Do you want to talk about the rest of the 49ers and the impact? Because the other thing, oh, spoiler alert, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be out for a little while because he's still dealing with this ankle injury that he re-aggravated. So let's, you know, if there's any waiver wire tight ends you want to add, fine. If not, talk about the 49ers and the impact here.
I just want to add to the Eagles situation, because while Goddard should be the guy rest of year, it's Zach Ertz is coming back. Yeah. So if you have an IR spot and Zach Ertz is available, pick up both if you can, but certainly still pick up Zach Ertz also, because he could still come back and have a significant role, as we know, for the Eagles as they make their playoff push in the miserable NFC East. I would look at still Trey Burton. You know, I mean, they're trying to find ways to put the ball in his hands. They gave him an opportunity, you know, for what looked like the Colts special, you know, with the play that they ran where he had the rushing touchdown. And also, look, you know, I know it was Ben DiNucci as opposed to Andy Dalton, but Dalton Schultz had a resurgent game against Philadelphia as well, just in terms of his targets. So better in PPR than non-PPR. And obviously that offense is a disaster, but that's another guy I would look at. And then I know the last time we saw the Texans tight end situation, it was miserable with Darren Fells, but you know that Jordan Akins and Darren Fells had both been putting up decent production. Hopefully Jordan Akins is coming back from the concussion. That's another guy I'd look at in deeper leagues. So there are guys you can look at. Clearly none of them are George Kittle, but, you know, and in deeper leagues, if Jordan Reed's not ready, Ross Dwelly, you know, he caught a touchdown from Nick Mullins as well. So they definitely need bodies. But in terms of the 49ers, Adam, I mean, you said it, Deebo Samuel's numbers ticked up last year. The hope would be Brandon Ayuk, you know, continues to just play at a high level. And I think he's going to be a must-start wide receiver for the foreseeable future. Great call by you, by the way, on Kendrick Bourne. He had a strong game against the Seahawks, and that's another guy until Deebo Samuel comes back. But a lot of people drop Deebo Samuel. You know, this could now be from a tight end-centric offense to a wide receiver-centric offense, and now both those guys become very prominent. So go pick up Deebo Samuel as well if you want to just speculate for the foreseeable future, for the long term, what's going to happen for them.
Yeah, last year, by the way, Ross Dwelly in the two games without Kittle, he had 7 targets in one of them, didn't do much. And then he faced Arizona, you know, that was the free space last year, and he caught 2 touchdowns. The only other name I want to throw out is Irv Smith. I know he's coming off a terrible game. He only had 1 target. Kirk Cousins threw 14 passes. So perhaps we shouldn't judge anything in the passing game there too harshly, just the bad weather. So we'll talk about all that on Tuesday. Thank you to Jamie. Thank you to Chris. Oh, one other thing that I noticed looking at the two games from last year, they faced Seattle and Arizona, and their run game was really bad in those two games.
Kittle is the best blocking tight end.
I know. You wouldn't think, but that's just another thing, right? Like, he might have an impact on the run game. So that is something, a beautiful matchup this week, Thursday night against the Packers. They can't stop anyone on the ground, but it's bad for their passing game, obviously, and it's bad for their run game. And Nick Mullins, by the way, he's basically like having a good game every other time he starts, going back to 2018, or plays, I guess, if you want to look at just his sub coming in as a sub. So he's kind of interesting as well. Throws a lot of interceptions, but that's a topic.
Well, he's a must-add in 2 quarterback and super flex leagues. Yeah. It's the 1 quarterback leagues that you're not going to necessarily
trust. All right, guys, thank you very much. Here's what we recorded earlier today. Enjoy the show.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races!
Some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
This is your Monday afternoon Fantasy Football Today podcast. We've got 5 big topics talking about the Ravens offense, the Chiefs offense, the Bills running backs, and more, and recapping a game that I just could not wait to end. I was just like, please end Dallas and Philadelphia. And it ended eventually. So I guess I got what I wanted. Good stuff. Welcome, everybody. It is Monday. I am Adam. Chris Towers and Ben Schrager are here. Greetings, Chris.
Yo, what's up? I'm glad that game ended. That would have been really bad if it just like
Oh, if it was still going? Could you imagine?
I mean...
Long overtime.
Well, the dumb NFL overtime rule is it would just end.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I'd be fine with that in that specific case.
Would you rather have NFL overtime rules or college football overtime rules?
NFL. College is actually no. Sports are supposed to be entertaining, and college is way more entertaining. So
I'd rather have college. If you extended NFL to like 15 minutes, I would definitely rather have NFL.
Yeah, I think the college is so gimmicky, and it works for college football. It would feel a little weird, a little gimmicky in the NFL. But yeah, you tell us how you feel, audience. All right, I'm going to give you the big news, then we'll get to the game, and we will give you your 5 big topics for the day and discuss, plus some interesting statistics and snap counts and things like that. George Kittle, Tevin Coleman, Jimmy Garoppolo, they're all supposed to play on Thursday. We don't know if they're going to play, but Jordan Reed could be back in week 9. So if you need a tight end and there's nobody out there, you could take a look at Jordan Reed. He might be Kittle's replacement, but hopefully Kittle's fine, and we'll see. Kenny Galladay, on the other hand, he is out week 9 and is considered week-to-week. So
IR is a possibility there.
Right, and that would be at least 3 games. Jamal Adams expected to play in week 9 for Carolina, but we're not sure about for Seattle, but we're not sure about Chris Carson. He may not play this week, and they are at Buffalo. I mentioned this on yesterday's show. Marquise Brown wants the ball. Give him the ball. Jonathan Taylor is dealing with an ankle injury, though. Bennett, I'm not sure this was a big impact during the game. Didn't seem like Frank Reich was really aware of it, but Taylor's got a little ankle thing.
Yeah, and Philip Rivers said after the game, when asked why the other running backs were involved, he said it was because Jonathan Taylor was nicked up, not an injury they knew about going into the game, but that had something to do with his workload, not getting the goal line touches that he usually gets. So hopefully it doesn't linger, but if it does, it's going to be an ugly 3-way committee, or Taylor may not play.
Man, that's really interesting. Makes me feel less horrible about having him in my lineups, I guess. Daryl Henderson dealing with a thigh injury. Sam Darnold is going to have an MRI on his shoulder. Kenyon Drake is unlikely to play this week, but he may not miss much time. So Chase Edmonds, fire him up unless he has COVID, because two players tested positive for COVID for Arizona during their bye week. We hope everything works out there. I think we're seeing a lot of COVID cases and not a lot of cancellations of games. So far, it has been working out. A Cleveland player was displaying COVID symptoms. They shut down their facilities. A.J. Dillon and Marlon Humphrey. A.J. Dillon for the Packers, Marlon Humphrey for the Ravens. They're on the reserve COVID list. Did they both play with COVID yesterday? I know Humphrey did.
They did.
That's scary. And the Humphrey one, he was apparently sent home with like a cold-like symptoms earlier in the week.
Right.
Tested negative and then came back and tested positive on Sunday's pregame screening, I guess.
Yeah, that's scary. And they're going to be doing contact tracing for the Ravens and the Steelers. But, you know, right now I can't expect any games to be postponed or anything like that. It's just not happening. Even when you get COVID cases just a couple days before a game.
Thursday's the only one, I guess, that may be in doubt right now.
Yeah, they'll just move it to Sunday or something, right? The Chargers have blown a lead of 16 or more points in four straight games. That is an NFL record. Congratulations. The Steelers acquired linebacker Avery Williamson from the Jets for a fifth-round pick. How about this from CBSSports.com about Carson Wentz? No quarterback has ever had 16 turnovers in the first 8 games of a season and made the playoffs. That is probably going to happen this year. The Eagles are the favorites to win their division. Chicago defensive tackle John Jenkins left late with an injury, and the Saints acquired Quan Alexander from San Francisco. That's a big one there. Should certainly help the Saints make their run defense even better. I know Sheldon Rankins was hurt. Don't think that was super serious. But there's that. Ben, what are we promoting today?
Yeah, we just got word from our games team. We now have a Monday Night Football prop contest. We're giving away $1,000, $1,000 every week for Monday Night Football props. Answer 7 prop questions, including Tom Brady over under 260 passing yards. Towers, what do you think of the 260 passing yards tonight?
I think you take the over on that one. The Buccaneers have not exactly shown that they'll pull off the gas if they're up big. They did that last week against the Raiders. I think if you're playing DFS tonight, the Buccaneers stack is probably the chalk play, but probably the one that you want to use as well.
Yeah, the other thing why I'm taking the over is Leonard Fournette is catching passes and catching passes well, so having him active helps. So I'm taking the over on that. But like I said, 7 props tonight. You get them all right, you got a chance at $1,000. That's cbssports.com/props. It's going to happen every Monday night. And the other thing to promote is our APR mailbag, Apple Podcast Review mailbag on Saturdays. It's a lot of fun. Leave that Apple Podcast 5-star review. We'll get your mailbag question answered. You know, leave it as early as possible because it does take a day to populate on Apple Podcasts. But leave that 5-star review and we'll get it answered on Wednesday's show or on the Saturday mailbag.
4 of the last 5 quarterbacks against the Giants have hit that over. So that's probably the way to go. Philadelphia 23, Dallas 9. Stat of the game comes from Jacob Gibbs. Been pumping him up lately. He's got the best stats, man. CeeDee Lamb tops 80% of the snaps in each of his first 2 pro games. Here's his game-by-game snap rate since then, week 3 on. 60%, 76%, 55%, 67%, 55%. He played 46% of the snaps in yesterday's loss, CeeDee Lamb. So snap share is going down for him. Production has been bad. You know, I'm not sure if people noticed, but Darius Slay was shadowing Michael Gallup yesterday. And Slay got hurt in that game, by the way. He and defensive tackle Malik Jackson left that game with injuries. But yeah, that was interesting. And Gallup ended up having the best game. So I think for Dallas, we're just going to hope for Andy Dalton to come back this week. He's expected to be back. DiNucci was not up for the task. They tried everything in the book and, you know, didn't really work. But let's talk about Ezekiel Elliott. Chris, are you concerned about him? This is now 19 carries for 63 yards and 1 catch for 10 yards. That catch came in the final minutes of the game. That's 49, 45, and 63 rushing yards in his last 3 games without a rushing touchdown and only 2 catches in his last 2 games.
Am I worried about Ezekiel Elliott? Yes, of course I am. I am probably among the people on this podcast. I would guess I'm probably the strongest proponent of the running backs don't matter theory, which is not to say that there's no good running backs and bad running backs. There obviously are. There's a range of skill sets and abilities, but situation matters I would say, a lot more than talent for a running back. And right now, Ezekiel Elliott is in maybe not the single worst situation in football, but it's probably not much worse than, or not much better than, the Jets right now. The Cowboys are still missing, I believe, four of their starting offensive linemen from the start of the season. I think three of them are on IR. So unlikely that they'll have them all at any point.
Well, they won't, because Tyron Smith, their left and right tackles are out for the year.
And he only has two targets in three of the last four games. And obviously that fourth game going back to week five was when Dak Prescott got hurt. So there's been a big change in his usage and a big change in his effectiveness. This offense is not creating a lot of positive value. And I don't know. I don't think Ezekiel Elliott is good enough to overcome this and be a number one running back. I think he is very much a number two running back and probably not a high end one.
Yeah. I think when you compare him to like Saquon Barkley, who going into the season, we thought maybe was going to be on a bad offense. I don't know how people felt about it, but I wasn't too optimistic. Not a great offensive line, but Barkley has the ability to break off a 65-yard touchdown run, and that's not really Zeke's thing anymore. He's very steady. He's very solid. He's very physical, but he doesn't get a lot. Like last year and so far this year, you're not seeing a lot of burst plays in the run game, or at least not without Dak Prescott this year. So I could see your point. I would say better than the Jets because he's not really splitting with anyone. Pollard had 7 carries, but Zeke had 19. I would expect him to get all of the goal line work. So it's better. I'm more optimistic for Zeke because I do feel like Dalton will involve him more in the passing game than DiNucci would.
I am too, and I think Dalton will get them closer to the goal line than DiNucci ever did last night, and Zeke will convert those goal line touches, which is why he is so great down, with the touchdowns. But he's going to need the targets and the receptions this year to have any sort of floor because he hasn't gone over 100 yards rushing this year. He went over that mark 7 times last year, and it's usually a volume play. It's usually get him to 20 touches, he gets over 100 yards. Not really happening this year. Now without Dak, they can zone in on the run game, and the offensive line is not as good as the pass. But yes, I think he's a number one running back, a low end number one, but in terms of buy or sell, I don't think we can really do either because the Zeke manager is probably just chilling with him at 20 touches and hoping he turns it around. And you can't really do anything else with him. You don't really want to sell him low if you are the Zeke manager.
No, you can't. You have to hold him. But you're probably looking at a weekly deficit of anywhere between 8 to 10 points from what you expected coming into the season. I think part of the problem is, and make that Saquon Barkley comparison, part of the problem is he just doesn't get split out wide very often. And so the targets that he does get tend to be, less valuable because it's a lot of screens, it's a lot of dump offs. It's not stuff down the field, which is something that you see with a guy like Saquon Barkley or an Aaron Jones or a Miles Sanders. So that's another place in which the way the Cowboys use him just doesn't. Things have to be really good, I think, for him to be that elite running back. And right now, things are really, really bad.
Okay, Ben, what are your thoughts on the Eagles coming out of this game?
I was really encouraged with how Fulgham was used. I wasn't sure, is Rager going to take the targets? Is Goddard going to be a heavy focus? Goddard was not involved really until the end of the game. He was on the field a lot, but not involved in the passing game. And Fulgham took 7 targets and made the most of them, 6 for 78 and a touchdown with some red zone looks that we've come to like over the past few weeks. So I think Fulgham is awesome. I think Boston Scott did exactly what we expected him to do against the Dallas defense that can't stop running backs. He didn't get into the end zone. That's it. You're satisfied with Scott, but Fulgham was encouraging, and Rager should be rostered in all leagues, even though he only went 3 for 16. He did have 6 targets in a game where Wentz didn't throw the ball very much at all.
Yeah, Wentz did not hit 27 passes, but he was also horrible. And Fulgham was the only Eagles player with more than 16 receiving yards. He had 6 catches, 78 yards, and a touchdown. Yeah, Rager becomes pretty interesting. I mean, even though 3 for 16 and 1, he showed some ability out there, and he did get 6 targets, which was nice. Goddard only 1 target, but he played a ton of snaps in this game. I mean, if you're going to tell me he was going to play like 85% of the snaps and run all these routes, I would have expected a much better game from Goddard, but Wentz was horrible. Horrible.
The good news there is he ran 29 routes. I think they had 33 dropbacks. And so he was used as a full-time player, which I was really surprised to see coming back from IR when he wasn't even clear he was going to play. They've got that bye in week 9, and I think you expect Dallas Goedert to come back in week 10 and be all systems go. I'm not sure if Zach Ertz is going to be back. I haven't heard any updates on that, but it doesn't seem likely based on the original timetable we were given.
So you think you should hold Goedert through your bye?
If you can, yeah. I definitely wouldn't want to drop him.
All right. Time for our email of the day. It comes from Trey. Trey says, the worst thing about fantasy football is how you have no control over what your opponent does against you. In real football, defense is half the game. In fantasy football, it's 0%. Well, I've got a solution. The defense budget. You can block one player on your opponent's team each week using a defense budget based space, defense budget space system, much like FAB. You get $100 in defense bucks a season. It costs 30 defense bucks, I don't know how he wants me to say it, to block a player projected at number one at their position for that week. 29 defensive bucks for number two, 28 for number three, and so on. It costs just one defensive buck to block players that are projected to finish 30th or lower. That way, there's a ton of strategy involved in how you play defense against your opponent, and you can't just block everyone's best player every week. I think that's pretty interesting. I don't think I would ever set up a league like this, but if you were in one, I think that's pretty cool. And what do you guys think? So, like, what a good use of bucks would have been, like, I don't know, $5 on Brandon Ayuk to block him when it just seemed like he was so likely to outperform his projection or whatever.
Yeah, it comes down to the projection system. I mean, that's something that on every website, everyone sees flaws in the projection system. So you can capitalize on that, and your strategy becomes who to start on your own team, and also where is there a flaw in the projections that week. You know, quarterbacks are usually projected so close together. You can probably find quarterback value every single week, and you could always find you're making your sleeper picks for the other team. You think there's a sleeper who's going to do really well, but he's not projected a lot. You play defense against that guy.
That does the fantasy manager get to replace that player, or it's just like a zero?
I think it's probably just a zero, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I don't know.
You need a deep bench to be able to replace all the time.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that you can do to spice up your fantasy football league. If you're in a bunch of leagues, what's wrong with me today? And you just want to kind of try some new things. Pardon me. I think guillotine leagues sound like a ton of fun. I definitely want to play in one next year. But this is kind of cool. Spend
Let's
some money
make
to block
the Twitch league. Twitch league next year should have some twists to it. Whether the Twitch league is guillotine or something, let's make it more fun than just your standard half PPR two wide receiver league.
All right. Yeah, I'm in. All right. Well, thank you for the email, Trey. Something to think about. Time for our five big topics. First one is from Sean. Devin Singletary and Zach Moss a two-headed monster, or is Moss taking snaps from Singletary rest of season? Well, Sean, this was the first week all year that Moss actually outsnapped Singletary by only 3 or 4 snaps. But, Ben, I'll give you the first word. What do you think about the Bills running backs rest of season?
Yeah, well, it was also the first week where the Bills running backs split evenly and also ran well. So it was against the Patriots, who aren't great against running backs. So I'm not super encouraged by it, but I like Moss a lot more than Singletary moving forward. Moss played more third down snaps this week. He had 6 red zone touches, and Singletary didn't have any snaps inside the 10. Moss is their third down guy. He's their red zone guy. He's their inside the 10 guy. He's their value touches guy. I do think the split will be pretty even in terms of touches moving forward, but we want the valuable touches, the high value touches, and that's Moss.
Chris?
There was one drive in the third quarter that I think really highlighted how much this offense seems to tilt towards Moss, but also how much I don't necessarily like either of them moving forward. So it was a drive where the Bills started at the 45 of the New England Patriots. Singletary, I think, got 3 carries in the first 4 plays. They got down to the 19-yard line, and then Moss came in. And he got a touch, I believe, from the 19, the 12, the 4 and the 2, didn't score, but got 4, you know, pretty valuable red zone touches, 3 inside the 15. And then, of course, Josh Allen scored the rushing touchdown. And I think that kind of highlights, like, I do like Moss more than Singletary. I think Moss is likely to be the goal line back moving forward, and I think that is more valuable than being the pass catching back. but I don't think either role is particularly valuable. Josh Allen doesn't throw to his running backs a ton. He's not particularly great at throwing to running backs. You still see a lot of errant throws, even on those short passes to running backs. And Josh Allen is still the primary goal line option here. I think he has 4 rushing touchdowns this season. So I think you're looking at number 3 running backs in both situations moving forward, Singletary and Moss.
Yeah, and then another drive, first drive of the game. Singletary had 4 touches right out of the gate, and then they got closer to the end zone, and Zach Moss came in, and he had 2 carries for like 29 yards, and the last one was an 8-yard touchdown run. So it's just going to be really hard for Singletary to score touchdowns. He's not making... Last year, he made a lot of big plays. He had a lot of 20-plus yard runs. That's what really got me very encouraged about him. This year, I think he has 1. And the offensive line's been really beat up, and they got John Feliciano back. He played his first game of the year, which was great. But then on the first possession, Mitch Morse left with a concussion. So they just can't get healthy. They've been playing without their starting left guard for their last 2 games. Hopefully he's back soon. I think everybody's probably on board with Moss over Singletary, but this was an inflated game because Josh Allen threw 18 passes in this game. It had really bad weather, and they just sort of ran the hell out of the ball. They both had 14 carries. They're just not going to see that. So this is a really bad backfield situation. It's like they don't catch a lot of passes. They're splitting fairly evenly, and you know, it's better than last year when Frank Gore was in the Zach Moss role.
Yeah.
But it's basically like, yeah, how can you start Singletary confidently? You're just hoping, oh, can he get me like 60 or 70 yards? That would be nice. But he's probably not going to.
Yeah, or you're hoping they're chasing points and he gets 5 or 6 targets.
Right.
But yeah, I think the thing is, if the offense gets better for the running backs, that would invariably mean it gets worse for Josh Allen.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to bring up. Like their defense has played a little bit better. They kept the Chiefs off the scoreboard. They gave up 26 points to the Chiefs, but we watched that game. They were just letting the Chiefs run all over them, and they were not bending in the, they were not breaking in the red zone. 10 points at the Jets, 21 points against New England. I don't know that their defense is actually getting better, but you know, maybe they are. They will try to get back to what we've seen from the Bills for the last like 20 years of just running the ball. But you know what? I don't like their matchup next week. It's against Seattle. I think we got to accept the fact that Seattle has a pretty good run defense. And teams can't run on them because teams are always throwing on Seattle.
And Stephon Diggs leads the NFL in targets. He should have a monster game.
He does?
I believe so.
Wow. Okay. All right. Second one here from... last thing I wanted to point out, the beat writer for the Bills for The Athletic actually said that Singletary had a better game than Moss, in his opinion. Both players were good, but Singletary was the better player on Sunday. I don't think any of us would have said that or thought that. From Shenanigans. Hey, Farber, what's the name of that bar you like to go to with all the Irish stuff on the wall?
Shenanigans?
You're talking about Shenanigans, right? Well, that's my favorite scene from
Fantastic
that movie.
Fantastic movie.
Ben, no idea? Nothing, Ben? Did we lose Ben?
Ben's frozen.
Oh, no. Ben with his dial... What's up with Ben and his dial-up internet, bro? It's really weird. So Ben'll come back. Shenanigans asks, what should I do with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Le'Veon Bell right now? Was it just game script? Chris?
Yeah, it's a little bit of game script. It was weird because this game went how we expected. The Chiefs won by 26 points, I think. If my math is correct, they were favored by 19.5, so took the over. But they barely ran the ball, which was really interesting.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
They just kept throwing the ball. It wasn't a lot of like deep stuff, but I thought it was an encouraging game for Patrick Mahomes. Not that you need to be encouraged for Patrick Mahomes, but they had been a little bit more conservative to start the season. I think you're probably looking at both Bell and CEH as like low end number twos. It's been much more of an even split than I expected. CH has what, 3 more touches over the 2 games that Bell has played?
18 to 15. But he played a lot more snaps yesterday. Mm-hmm. This feels a little fluky to me. This split, like, and the fact that they're barely getting the ball. I mean, in 2 games, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has 18 touches and Bell has 15. That's just really low. So they have won their last 2 games by such big, you know, blowout margins that they've actually been turning to, Darrell Williams and Darwin Thompson had 7 carries in this game. And a lot of that was like the last drive of the game.
Yeah, it's interesting because CH in week one of the Le'Veon Bell era, they split routes pretty much evenly. I think it was like 12 to 11. CH actually ran 24 routes yesterday to Bell's 10. So that actually is very promising for Edwards, Elair, even though the production was pretty evenly split between the two of them. So maybe you're probably still, I still think it's like low end number two for CEH, flex for Bell, but it has not been an encouraging start to their time together in either direction, I think.
I guess I'm more optimistic about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, although there was a 4th-and-1 play in that game. Oh, hi, Ben. There was a 4th-and-1 play in that game, and Le'Veon Bell was in. So again, I can't remember the last time the Chiefs, I don't know, this might be dumb. Maybe they have. I just can't remember a lot of like first and goal from the one situations. You know, we don't really know who their goal line back is.
Yeah.
I still am not convinced it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire because, you know, a few weeks ago, Edwards-Helaire had that great game and they had a 4th-and-1 and Darrell Williams was in the game and he got to carry and he scored. So they haven't really been using him, I don't think, much in short yardage. But also, the Chiefs don't have a lot of short yardage because they convert on 3rd-and-15 every time. Every time. It is unbelievable. Ben Schrager, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. And their goal line back is a combination of Mecole Hardman.
Yeah.
Underhand passes to Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill.
Hate those passes. Ridiculous passes. All right. I'll be a little more optimistic about Clyde Edwards-Helaire than Chris.
So, okay. Just a little. I went and looked it up. They've had 7... Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been on the field for 4 plays that were 2 or 1 to go to get the first down over the last 2 weeks. CH has been on the field for 4 of them. 3 of them were passes. Only 1 of them was a rush. And Le'Veon Bell has been for 3. All 3 of them were rushes.
So
that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Right. That was the one I remember was the 4th-and-1 play.
Yeah. So it's still a very small sample size. And like DeAndre Washington has a snap in that situation. Darrell Williams and Darren Thompson also do. So, you know, we're still dealing with very small sample sizes. But I do think you can probably lean towards Bell being that goal line and short yardage back.
This is a trade from Noah. Grade the trade. Give up Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Robbie Anderson to get Ezekiel Elliott.
D.
C minus. I think it's very close, but I would want a little bit more than Zeke.
When we come back, we'll talk about the Ravens offense on Fantasy Football Today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Fantasy Football Today. Ben Schrager just got a cable modem installed, so he's improving. We'll just keep getting DSL. Remember DSL? Like, all that stuff.
Oh, man, that was a game changer.
Yeah, oh, yeah, big time.
Download a song in like 3 minutes.
The question is from Backburner, our next big topic. How to approach starting anyone in the Ravens offense? The Ravens this year are running 3.6 fewer plays per game, averaging about 0.5 yard fewer per play. They're scoring 4.2 fewer points per game. They've gone from 2nd in yards per game to 20th in yards per game. They've gone from 1st in scoring to 9th in scoring. Still the number one rush team in the NFL. That's a lot of Lamar Jackson. And before I throw it over to you guys, let me just give Lamar Jackson's 16-game pace. This is what he's on pace for. 3,070 yards, 27 touchdown passes, 9 interceptions, plus 939 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns. those numbers look basically incredible to me. And yet he's 11th per game in 4-point and 10th per game in 6-point per passing touchdown leagues, which is just amazing.
Well, yeah, you see that in also they're only averaging, 4.2 fewer points per game. But they've dropped from first to ninth in scoring. Scoring is just way up this season.
Right. And he's not keeping pace.
Yeah, that has really changed the context in which these numbers are being put up.
So who are you guys confidently starting? Ben, since you missed the last discussion, you can kick it off. Like, who are you confidently starting on the Ravens going forward? They are at the Colts this week.
It's J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards until Mark Ingram is back. I think they're both going to be RB2s. They're both – that split is going to be a split. It's just if there's two running backs, it's a heck of a lot better than three because they'll get over 10 touches and they'll be efficient. So they're both low-end RB2s. Mark Andrews is the other one who I don't mind starting because there's not a lot of other consistent tight end options. You're just not getting, you know, that top three tight end value that you thought you were when you drafted him. He hasn't gone over 60 yards this year. He did that 5 times last year. He's not making the big play touchdowns, but he is getting red zone targets. He's getting downfield targets. It's just he's not going to be consistent. No consistency at all, but I'm fine starting him because I don't think you have a better option.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm also bearish on bullish.
You are bullish.
I'm bullish on Marquise Brown.
Yeah. Me too.
The role he's playing in that offense, he's ninth in the league in air yards. He's getting a ton of deep targets, and it's just they just haven't connected on enough of them. But I have faith. I feel like that's more like random variance than anything that they need to change, really. You're missing a couple of big plays by like a foot or a yard. And when you're talking about, you know, a throw 30 yards down the field, that'll happen sometimes. And there will be other times when they probably will hit like 5 passes of 20 plus yards in a 2-game span. And it's just the kind of thing where you kind of have to ride that wave. And I think he's a high variance fantasy wide receiver, but I still want him on my team. And I definitely still want him on my team. And I definitely still want to try to trade for him if people are low on him.
Right. Yep. Now. Squeaky wheel / crickets. Yep. Squeaky crickets for him. We haven't even talked about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has 53 or more rushing yards in every game. I said that on the show yesterday. In every game but one. The one time he didn't, he was playing hurt. So I just feel like the floor is so high, and I'm more confident in him. I don't think he's the number 11 quarterback rest of season. I think he's much better than that. Just has to stop turning the damn ball over.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he had that beautiful rushing touchdown and got called back. So, and Pittsburgh was really bad for him last year. He was bad against them last year. So it was a tough matchup, I guess. And they moved the ball. What were the total yards in this game? It was such a lopsided game early in the game. The first half, it's like Pittsburgh had that pick six, but it seemed like every time they showed the game on red zone, the Ravens had the ball and they were driving.
Ravens had 457 yards of total offense. They ran,
oh my gosh,
65 yards.
The Steelers had 221 yards and the Ravens had 457.
Yeah, the difference was the Steelers had short fields the entire time because they turned the Ravens over 4 times. And that'll happen sometimes. We saw it in the Dolphins and Rams game, but the Ravens offense, this happens every time there's some historical offense. We saw it with the Chiefs in 2018 into 2019. We're seeing it the Ravens this year. We saw it with that Broncos 55 touchdown Peyton Manning season. Anytime you have a historical pace, we'll always try to talk ourselves into, but this is why this one is different. Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid is a combination we've never seen, or Lamar Jackson. And those things are true, but regression always happens. And that's what we're seeing with the Ravens offense, is that they're regressing to being a very good offense instead of, you know, the greatest rushing offense we've ever seen. The biggest problem for them is, when Mark Ingram gets back, are they going to keep giving him the ball? And if so, I think you've probably got a situation where there's a must-start tight end, a high-variance wide receiver, and then 3 running backs who I don't think you can trust as anything more than a flex.
Next up, we have Gardner's Gardner. What are your thoughts on Joe Burrow moving forward after the bye? Tough 3 games in a row after week 9. And that would be Pittsburgh, Washington, and the Giants. The truth is, If you look at his opponents and the fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks, like Washington and the Giants have not given up a lot of fantasy points to quarterbacks. I do not think that means that they have good pass defenses. So, yeah, I think you're sitting him at Pittsburgh in week 10, but after that, I don't know. Ben, what are your thoughts on Joe Burrow going forward? He is, on a per-game basis, 14th in four-point per passing touchdown leagues, 19th in six-point. Why the big difference? He's on pace for 4,544 passing yards. That's a lot, but only 22 touchdown passes. So that hurts him in the six-point per passing touchdown leagues. And he has six rushing touchdowns. He's on pace for six rushing touchdowns. Thoughts on Burrow?
Yeah, I think right in that range of, you know, QB 14 to 19 is probably where he'll be for the rest of the season. I want to start him in good matchups. I don't want to start him in medium to bad matchups. The two games he went over 30 points were both against Cleveland. He was 47 attempts and 61 attempts to get over 30 points. They're going to throw a lot. They don't have a good run game because they don't have a good run offensive line. But I don't love Burrow moving forward. I would not be confident if Burrow is my only quarterback, and I wouldn't want to make a move to have Burrow as my only quarterback. But it's just going to be a right above streaming level, but not a ton of confidence.
Bengals are second in the NFL in pass attempts per game. He has the most red zone pass attempts, fifth most in the green zone, which is inside the 10, yet he's 10th in touchdown passes inside the 10. Here was an interesting stat, though. Here are the teams, the four worst teams in the NFL in terms of yards after catch per completion. Yards after catch per completion. The Eagles, Bears, Giants, Bengals. Bengals are the fourth worst. They're not getting a lot after the catch. That is kind of interesting for them to be in the same territory as the Bears and the Giants. And the Eagles, aren't really that surprising. I mean, that was my issue with Carson Wentz. He just doesn't have any yak guys. But Chris, you get the final word here on Joe Burrow. I tend to agree with Ben in the 14 to 19 range going forward. But if he keeps throwing this much, if he can just get the touchdown rate up a little bit, it's pretty low. Maybe things can change.
Yeah, that's an interesting stat because usually you'll see yak and air yards have kind of an inverse relationship. So the deeper your passes are, the less yak you typically get. And Burrow is 11th in air yards per pass attempt. He's only 16th in completed air yards per pass attempt. So it's not like, you know, they're hitting on a bunch of deep plays. I think part of the problem is AJ Green's gotten a ton of targets, and I know he looked better in week 7, but I think AJ Green is completely cooked. And they brought in Auden Tate to play a bigger role this week. I actually think there's a lot to like about Joe Burrow moving forward. I think there's, you know, over the last 5 games, his yards per attempt is up to 7.7 at 6.9 over the course of the full season. So improving there, it's just been those touchdowns. I think, you know, if they continue to throw it as much as they do, eventually guys like T. Higgins, who's had a lot of red zone targets and hasn't really come up with too many of them, that's going to turn around. And it really has seemed like, I'm just thinking about it, there's been like 4 red zone targets to like Drew Sample that have like been really close, like in his hands and then knocked out, a couple of the T. Higgins, a couple that he's overthrown. So I think he's really close. Probably not an elite fantasy QB, but someone who against the right matchups will be worth starting moving forward.
Burrow or Breeze rest of season?
Breeze. Burrow.
Burrow, Breeze. All right. Burrow or Burrow. I always go to Breeze. That's like my default. I'm not used. How about Goff or Burrow?
Burrow.
Close.
They're the same guy, though, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, Joe Burrow is at least not a coward. He'll take chances.
Oh, gosh. From Gorilla Deluxe. What moves should winning teams be making to improve their odds of winning through the playoffs to the championship? Give one piece of advice, guys.
As the bye weeks start to pass, you should be looking to consolidate your roster. Having depth in the playoffs, having depth in week 14, it's nice if you need a fill-in and you shouldn't just have no depth, but you should try to build the best team you possibly can. If you're 7-1 or 6-2, maybe you make your team a little bit worse in the next 2 weeks. Target someone who's on a bye, target a team who's desperate for a win right now, and see if you can get, you know, those elite players, because that's what your you're going to win your championship with elite players.
That was pretty much my advice.
I'll piggyback on that and give a little nugget too. To piggy on that, it's Michael Thomas, Nick Chubb, Austin Eckler, Miles Sanders.
Yeah.
See what their price is. I'm not saying you should give a lot for them, but if you can, you're in a good position to do it. Miles Sanders could be a league winner. Nick Chubb could be a league winner. It's worth inquiring about. And the other thing, the Cardinals DST. If they're out there, pick them up. If they're not out there and they're on a roster, offer your worst bench player for them. Weeks 12 through 16, Patriots, Rams, Giants, Eagles, Niners.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Chris. Let's finish up with some interesting stats here. DeAndre Swift's role is increasing. I saw Dave tweet this. So he's playing more and more snaps. It was kind of an unlucky game. Didn't get the ball a lot. And Kerryon Johnson happened to be on the field and he caught that touchdown. But Dave says buy low. Good opportunity to buy low on DeAndre Swift. The three Pittsburgh wide receivers, Juju, Deontay Johnson, and Claypool, played the same amount of snaps. John Brown played 81% of the snaps, so you could see some better production from him. I mean, he was off to a great start when Josh Allen was clicking, when John Brown was healthy. I think he's probably a little underrated, a little under-rostered, John Brown. Denzel Mims played 96% of the snaps. Preston Williams played 15 more snaps than Devontae Parker. That was pretty interesting.
I think that was just an injury thing.
Parker, he got hurt again?
That groin. No, he was just coming back from that groin. He was limited all week in practice. That would be my assumption there.
It's always a good assumption with Devontae Parker.
Williams didn't exactly cover himself in glory, dropping two of his four targets.
Did you guys have anything to add? Any stats you wanted to add? Ben, was there a usage rate?
Yeah, Jerry
stat?
Judy.
Yeah.
Very cool Jerry Judy note that may not be relevant if Tim Patrick comes back, but 159 air yards in week 8 was the highest in the NFL, and he had his season highs in routes run, 44, and snaps, 89% of the snaps. So Jerry Judy, he looked very good. It's not a good pass offense. He's going to need this volume, but if he's going to lead the league in air yards and run that many routes, I'm encouraged. And if Tim Patrick's not there, I'd prefer Jerry Judy to some waiver wire options for sure.
And I got a couple of notes. Deontay Foreman may be Derrick Henry's handcuff.
Yes.
He actually looked really good in his first action since 2018. Ran 5 times, 37 yards. He only played 6 snaps. Jerry McNichols played like 12, I think. So McNichols is the backup right now, but Foreman is probably a better analog for Derrick Henry. So not saying you should pick up Deontay Foreman, but if Henry gets hurt, I think Foreman is the guy that you're going to want to add over Jeremy McNichols. Jarvis Landry nearly had 2 touchdowns in this game. He was targeted 11 times on 25 pass attempts. I think he's going to get a ton of work moving forward. And he actually almost had a touchdown. I think it was initially ruled a touchdown on a diving catch. Replay overturned it, but that we would be looking at that a lot differently. It was like a 25-yard catch, too.
You talk about Jarvis Landry?
Yeah.
I spent like 10 minutes defending him yesterday. And not just that, making the case that he's like a great buy-low candidate.
I think he probably is. Yeah.
Especially since going into a bye, nobody wants to hold him through a bye.
Yeah. No, I think if someone drops him, go out and add him if you've got the roster spot. I think all of that makes a lot of sense. And I didn't mention this during the earlier Bills discussion, but I believe Moss has 10 touches inside the green zone. So within the 10-yard line, Allen has 9, and I think Singletary has 5. And remember, Singletary played 3 games with Moss out.
And I just put up a Twitter poll. How do you pronounce R-O-U-T-E-S?
It depends what word you're talking about.
Roots or rhymes with shouts.
Yeah, you run a route and you drive on Route 66.
Okay, well, I didn't put that option. I didn't put that option on there. Yeah, Route 66. But if it was like 67, you could say anything you want. Just if it's 66,
Route 67.
You have to say route. Okay. Let's get out of here. We're going to route for the Giants tonight. It will be a route for the Buccaneers, I suspect. I think you all can figure out the code there. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on Tuesday with the Waiver Wire. Make sure you listen to the Fantasy Football Today and 5 podcast as well. See ya.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.